Good evening, guys. We are live. Let's just give it a few minutes to catch up, as always. Here we go. We are live, we are live, we are live. Let's get this shared. I've got Shane on my own personal account there. Here we go. Good evening, guys. Let's give it another couple of seconds to catch up. There we go. Shared. Good evening, guys. Welcome to the Accidental Journalist Series 2, Episode 21. You will notice that we're 21 and not 22. Just talking to the elephant in the room here, we've had to renumber due to the problems that we had over the last week. Apart from that, all is good. Thanks as always to my sponsors, one of which is on the screen right now, and Mr. James Jeffries and Charlie Farringdon.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah. Sorry. So we are with Charlie Farringdon tonight, and Charlie's going to share her life story, her journey up to now, and how she met the legend that is Mr. James. So Charlie, thanks for coming on. It's great to have you on.
That's okay.
Let's take you back to the beginning of your journey and find out where you're from and where it took you.
So I was born in Gosport. I'm Gosport born and bred, sometimes unfortunately, but yeah, Gosport can be a nice place. When I was born, up until 4 years old, I was actually born deaf. I had something what they call glue ear. All the doctors and everybody else just thought I was a lazy baby because my older sister would talk for me. It took my mum and dad, but mainly my mum, because she was home a lot, to fight to get my grommets fitted. I was a very good lip reader. That's why they thought I was being lazy. Then from 4 years old till I was 8, I had my grommets. I could hear, which was a very scary part of the world. When you haven't heard for the first 4 years of your life, it's actually quite scary. I suppose it's like not being socialised and then being chucked in the big sea and saying, hey, go to school, socialise with all these children. Even down to a lemonade bottle opening, I would cower at that because I'd never heard it before. Helicopters, church bells, literally everything I just cowered at because it was all new. It was a very scary place to be at the time. I overcome that. I can hear now, but all the specialists have said if I ever lose my hearing, even now, I will never get it back again. At the age of 15, I had a perforated eardrum. I had to go into hospital to have that fixed. So I've had surgery on my ear, which wasn't very nice, but you know, it's for the better to be done so I can hear and not have permanent hearing loss. I obviously went to school, had a lot of trouble at school because I was badly dyslexic, and that, you know, my hearing probably didn't help because I couldn't hear. Got really badly bullied at school. Because I was the stupid one. I was in all the lower lessons. School, amazing. Well, the one school I went to wasn't. I won't mention the name, but people will probably know. It is in Gosport, where my mum and dad were fighting to get me extra help. One of the head teachers said, oh, one of us might have fallen asleep in your meeting, but not all of us. So it's like, right, So my mum and dad moved me schools. And then I went to this school, which is in quite a posh part of Gosport. And they couldn't have been any more different. It turned out I was 3 years behind on all of my subjects in junior school. So they tried to get me up to where I needed to be for senior school. With a lot of hard work for myself and dedication from the learning assistants, we slowly got there. Obviously, because I needed the extra help, I got bullied for that. I overcome being bullied. I went to senior school. I got offered certain amount of devices, so like recording things, laptops, but I wouldn't take it because I felt I was being bullied enough. I felt if I had all this extra assistance, it would make things worse. In some ways, yes, I do regret it because I think it would have helped me. But at the time, you don't see that. You just see this lonely world of bullying. I never had many friends. I don't now. I have a close circle of about 3 or 4 friends, but I think that's due to trust. So life wasn't the worst, wasn't the best for me. I then went on to college to Sparshall to do an animal care course, which I passed the first year. I didn't go back for the second because of money reasons. My passion is animals, definitely dogs. I could talk all day long about dogs. I did do a separate college alongside my college course of dog behaviourist. I've studied dog behaviour. I then went and got a couple of jobs. Unfortunately, wasn't working with animals because it's not really out there in Gosport. It's further afield. So I've become a cleaner. I've worked in a hospital. I worked in the hospital in Gosport for 13 years before I quit my job. The reason I quit my job is because me and my ex had a daughter, and she's lovely. She's 15 now. And we were going through the stage of getting her diagnosed with autism. My job became very, very stressful. You wouldn't think it working in a kitchen, but it did. And it was affecting mine and my daughter's relationship. So we had a chat and I took the idea to quit. And we said we will work through it somehow. In that time, I was also getting bullied at work by a racist person. So I hit the drink. I was only 23 or 24. And it started off as a bottle of wine a night. It was lovely. It took everything away at night. But you still got to wake up to it in the morning, go to work and face that person that is doing this to you. But I didn't see that to start with because alcohol is an addiction. It is also a coping mechanism for people like drugs, things like that. I drank for a good 5 years and it turned into a box of wine a night until my ex went to my mum and said, I can't put up with her behaviour anymore. Either take her away or me and Lillian will have to leave. I chose that decision to stop for a bit, which I did. I then had another rough patch in my life. I went through a bit of a mental breakdown. So I thought, I know how to cope with this. Let's hit the drink again. From then on, I was about 26, maybe 28. I drank and drank. I always made sure my daughter was in bed before the drink come out. She never saw it as such. Obviously, she might have seen me buy it, but didn't know what it was. And again, it took everything away, made it feel better. Excuse me. And then 2019. Sorry, excuse me.
All right.
2019. I got so drunk. So two, sorry, 2017, I had a son with my ex. I was still drinking then, but I didn't drink when I was pregnant. Going on to 2019, I got so drunk in the flat that me and my ex were living at, he had to have me arrested. That was over the Easter. It got NFA'd because he knew it wasn't me, he knew it was the drink, so he wouldn't do a statement. I come home and my daughter said, "What happened to you last night, mummy? You got taken away by police. You were hitting daddy and you were spitting at daddy." Now I feel so ashamed of that because I don't remember any of it. And that's when I was like, "What do you mean I was hitting daddy and spitting at him?" That's when I chose then to knock it on the head. It's something needed to be done before either my children got taken away from me or I killed myself. So I come home that day, tipped all the wine down the sink, and went, "No more, no more." My children, definitely my daughter at the time, because my son wasn't that old, is still going through her problems. She's in a special school. I thought, do you know what? She doesn't need to see this. She's got enough of her own problems, let alone trying to cope with what I'm going through. There must be another way to cope around this. Luckily, I've got a really strong, supportive family because my mum went through very bad depression. So they helped me. Get through it, overcome things, just talking to people helped. I know it doesn't seem like it because you've got to think, oh, I've got to trust this weird person, but actually it does help. And then where were we? We were 2020. I got my ex through his own mental breakdown. It'd been coming for years and years. 2020 it was. He had a really bad mental breakdown to the point I knew it was bad because he started cutting himself, and he always said, if you do that, it's the coward's way out. So we got through that. Our relationship wasn't the best. It was on a downer, but I thought, do you know what? He's the kid's dad. I can't just leave him. If he was someone else, maybe it might have been different. Last year, I chose to end our relationship because it just wasn't going anywhere. We were just bickering all the time. Yes, he wasn't happy with it to start with, but now he sees it's for the better and we get on a lot better. Then I got with another man, which is one of the sponsors on here. Met him through a dating site, and we went from there. Early this year, very early this year, I got him through a mental breakdown to the point he thought if he tried to jump off a bridge, it would end his misery and everyone else's. They wanted to section him, and I said, no, sectioning works for some people, not for everyone. He needs tablets, medication, and a listening ear, and not to be locked up in a room. They didn't like that, the specialists, because they were like, what do you know? You haven't studied it. Well, what do I know? I probably know quite a lot about mental health because I'm still on depression tablets myself now. I still struggle myself. So we got through that. We've had a couple of blips over the year, but now they've got him on the right medication. He's doing okay. You know, he's not at the best place, but really, who is? Whoever is at a good place, you know? So yeah, we've now got a flat. We've got a little puppy. Obviously, I've got my children that now stay at weekends. So hopefully things are looking on the up. I will say alcohol isn't the best way to go. It feels like it, but you get into a rut. You start to think that's the only thing that can make you cope, because nothing else and no one else and nothing will help. But actually, there is other ways around it. If you can't afford much, put some headphones in, go out for a little walk. You don't have to listen to the world or the people because you've got your music. Just try and find something that suits you, maybe a bit of mindfulness or, you know, things. There is things out there. There is help out there. And I would say to those people that need help, please reach out for it before it gets too bad. Otherwise, yeah, it's just not a good place to be. And I don't think you can describe it until you have been there yourself, and people don't always understand. Yeah, it is a very lonely world. Again, coping with my daughter's autism. We thought we were walking a minefield. We thought we were the only ones out there. And it is hard. Someone says your child has additional needs and this. It is hard accepting it. Because at first you think, but my child's perfect. But actually, whether your child has got autism, Asperger's, dyslexia, Down syndrome, every child is Mary Poppins and they are perfect in every single in their own way. And as long as you can help them accomplish life to the best of their abilities, do you know you've succeeded so well there? Because that's a big thing. It's scary because of how the world's going, because you've got to go out knifed up now. You know, you can't just go out. It's not just fist on fist now. It's not a nice world. And you do worry when your child is very vulnerable. Because my child is so sociable. The world is roses and she loves everyone. She doesn't see bad out there. So it is scary. It's going to be scary as a parent, even if you've got a normal child as such, because social media is such a big thing for children now. You've got to be in with it, be on social media. We didn't have that back then, and I think it was so much better. The little boy is looking good. He's got a bit of a speech delay, but that will work in time. But again, it's still a worry. Is he going to get led down a path of a gang because they see weakness in someone? It's a worrying world when you've got children. Now and again, yes, I still think, let's just have a drink to take it away. But then I have to think, actually, I've got children. I don't need to drink because they need me. The drink doesn't. So yeah, it is a big thing, and overcoming things like I did, being deaf, being bullied. I wasn't just bullied at school, like I say, I was bullied in a workplace as well. So yeah, I have had to overcome a lot of things. I think it helps that I have got a very supportive family, definitely my mum. And anything can be achieved if you put your mind to it. And so, yeah, I have overcome quite a lot in my life. I've helped people through things in my life. And I have just, you just have to get on. If you don't fight, you flight and you die. And that's not going to happen. I'm a very strong-willed person. Very stubborn, very determined. And again, I don't know if that's helped. But yeah, it has been difficult. I don't really know what else to say about it, but I have come a long way, I feel, and I feel that I have achieved stuff.
You have. I remember when James first met you and what he was going through. You know, I know how sort of broken he was from when we did our podcast and speaking to each other pretty much every week, and then, you know, how low he got. You know, I'm with you there on the mental health problems. You know, I've been honest pretty much every episode, every week about my battle with addiction and mental health and battling suicide several times in my life. So I know where you are there.
I think the thing with depression is, yes, you get depression for whatever reason, but I myself feel that you can't always come out of it until you have hit rock bottom. So I say it's like you've hit the end of the tunnel. You think now there's no way out, and you've got to start those very, very slow baby steps to dig yourself back up. And as I've explained to James numerous times, that one day you'll see like a pinprick of a light at the end of this tunnel, and you'll be like, yes, I'm getting there. The next day it will all fall in, and you think, but I was getting there, and you feel like going back to the drink, the drugs, the smoking of whatever, maybe that's cigarettes, whatever you want to smoke. But actually, you can't, you've got to be very strong. Can't go back to that and say, tomorrow will be a better day. I'm going to open that light up and I'm going to climb a bit further. That's how I got with the drink. I did hit rock bottom. I did have to climb a long way up that tunnel. And it doesn't just happen overnight. It can take weeks, it can take months, even years. And again, with depression, you don't just get depression, hit that tunnel and hit rock bottom. Again, that can take months, years. But I think when you come out the other side, you are a much better person off from that because of what you've had to achieve. That's how I see it. And that's how I've described it to people, that, you know, unfortunately, before you do anything with depression, you have got to hit rock bottom, and whether that is suicide, drinking, drugs, until you've done that, you're not really going to be in a good place. I don't know how you feel about that, Jack, if you think that's hit it.
Yeah, I mean, I've battled with my confidence and I've battled with my mental health pretty much my whole life. You know, from being about 4 years old and not speaking to being 8 years old and told I'm adopted, it's gone like up level. And I've been through some trauma in my life, and I want people to know that's not normal. Not everybody goes through trauma after trauma after trauma after trauma. But we do get sort of bonded to our own trauma. We get bonded to our own negative emotions. We get stuck in the victimhood.
Yeah.
We get stuck in that victim mentality. And for me, there are three stages. There are victim, survivor, and thriver. We're now in the thriver mentality. Sometimes we go back into the survivor mentality because that's, you know, survival's a basic instinct. But, you know, we were victims of our own circumstance, and then we took a hold of that, took a hold of our you know, with our own recovery, and we stepped into that. I couldn't have done it myself without my wife, with my now wife, who's been a positive force since day one. You know, it was meeting her that gave me the, courage to sort of want to look into getting sober again. I couldn't do it at all. I tried and tried. I'd had many years of recovery, and then, you know, I lost it all because I lost everything, like I explained to you before. And I became a victim of myself, of my own negative emotions. And we do that. We become victims of our own circumstance, and then that becomes happenstance. And then we get stuck in that. We've got a different rock bottom. All of us have got a different rock bottom. Many times in my life, I've gone through a different rock bottom. And the last time was me dying, literally. And figuratively, you know, I died, and it took, you know, that mentality took my life. But the mentality that I have now, since finding recovery and finding another way of thinking and another way of living in better mental health, and it's not always easy, and I do get down sometimes, and you know, I've got kids, and you know, they all struggle with their own sort of mental health, I guess. And you know, my wife has a hard time as well. So it's, the thing is, I am not bonded to that drama anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not bonded to that trauma. That trauma, you know, it's still there in certain things, but I think the thing about a lot of addicts and a lot of people like myself and you and James is that we get stuck in that trauma, and then we rob ourselves of our own lives. Nobody else takes it away, and we get guilt and shame, and they're two killers. Guilt and shame are the two biggest killers of men.
I think also with mental health, to get the help you need, you also need to be in a good place to accept that help. I think if you do need to do it when you're at rock bottom, but you need to know when is the right time to say, yes, I now need your help. Yes, I'm at rock bottom, but now this is the time. Please help me out of this. Again, I don't think you can, you will never get rid of mental health in any person. You have to learn how to live with it, and how to use coping mechanisms to help your own mental health. And again, it's easier said than done, because some days you might think, oh, I'll just turn back to whatever you thought would help you cope. But you need to have that mind over matter that actually, no, I can do this. I can get my mind over this because I've got more matters in my life that need me. And I think sometimes that's the way you have to look at it, to say, right, come on. No, I don't need that. I don't need this to help, because actually I've got my children or my family or a friend that might need me, a neighbour that needs me. But it is a big thing. Like I say, mental health will never go away in a person. It's how you deal with it yourself, and how you learn to basically cope with it.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point. I don't think you can do it without a power greater than yourself, a higher power. and whether you choose or a god of your own understanding, whatever you choose to call God, whoever you choose to call God.
Yeah.
You know, because you have to be able to, you know, you said it, acceptance, you know, but the thing from at the start is the how, and, you know, honesty, open-mindedness and willingness. You got to be honest with yourself. You got to be honest with other people, and you got to be honest with God. You got to be open-minded to think, well, actually, my way isn't always the best way, or if it was the best way, it's certainly not now. And the willingness to change and the willingness to learn. You know, the biggest part for me, I don't go to meetings anymore or anything like that. I find the whole thing difficult. The people difficult. I think the people, you know, it's, you know, 12-step programs are great. You know, the meetings are great, but because it's full of addicts, but, you know, the problem is it's full of addicts. And, you know, you've got your people that have got their own problems, and then they force it upon you, and then you end up going round and round in circles and getting this negative emotion. I found my way, and I speak about it, and I speak about how I do it, and I do it openly and honestly. You know, I don't believe that I'm in a place where I can be anonymous anymore.
Yeah.
Because I've gone through a certain thing. You know, I've lived a certain way, and it is my responsibility to help educate, and to do that, I can't be anonymous. Get people like you come on that give up their anonymity to help further the cause, really, because I believe that we can get through it together. You know, alone we couldn't do it, but together we can. But
yeah,
we've got to ditch the personalities.
And again, around mental health, there is a big stigma, definitely for men. If you go to someone, oh, you're weak because you need help. Well, actually, that's not the case. You're going there to seek help to get yourself a better person, because you've obviously realised, male or female, you're now in a place where you really don't want to be. I also do think mental health isn't recognised enough, and there isn't enough out there, help out there for mental health. Also, I think some people are so overwhelmed that they've got a mental health problem, they shouldn't have it. And then they don't know which way to turn for help, because they think, well, if I go to my doctor, they're just going to put me on this tablet. And if I go to these, they might lock me up because they'll see me as a mental. So mental health does need to be recognised a lot more. But again, that comes down to government, comes down to funding. Because if you haven't got the funding there, no one's going to get the help they need. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, this place can be closed because it's not really needed, when actually it probably is. It's all right for the government. They're sitting on pockets of money. They're not going through the crisis we're going through. And again, at the minute, that's not going to help mental health either. So, yeah, really, I think mental health in itself and the help out there needs a, and the government needs a good shake up from it, to say that this is what needs to be done to help people. But unfortunately, the government like their statistics, like the numbers, to be perfect. And if you can close the one place to make more money on another place, well, that's not always the way to go about. But yeah, and I think it's just about people need to know where they can reach out for help, who to go to. Because like I say, there aren't enough leaflets about to say, yeah, you can reach out to these people, or you can reach out to these. And yeah, you can go to your doctor. He can put you on a tablet. He could also refer you to someone. But has that place got the funding to take you on? Doctors as well, they're good. But as I got told, they're only trained in every little area. So they, unless you have got a specialist mental health doctor, that's why they just stick you on tablets, because they're trained in every little bit of the body, not specifically in mental health. And like I say, they could say, right, okay, I'll put you on this for now. I'll refer you to here. But actually, can that place take you on? Have they got the resources, the funding? No, probably not, because government are taking it away, which isn't right. Because the waiting lists are so long now to get to see someone, you almost feel like giving up. And that shouldn't be the case for anything. So obviously, I don't know if there's a way of changing it. Probably not. I'd like to think there is, I'd like to think there is, just some people can reach out and say that I don't want to be this person on this, or this person drinking this, or this person taking this, because it wasn't me. But where do they start? You know, it's a hard one. It is hard, and I won't say it's not. And that's why people choose to go down bad paths, good paths, whatever they want to see it as. Everybody is different. Until they can get the help. And whether that is you try to take your own life to get the help, to make people see that you need help. And again, that's bad, that you've got to basically say, oh, I'm going to go and jump off the bridge. I'm going to slip my wrists. I'm going to OD on this. I'm going to OD on that. Why should you have to get to that state for someone to listen? You shouldn't. That it should be out there. You shouldn't have to get to that place in your life where you think, I'm not worth it.
No.
You know, no one's worth my time. Because you shouldn't have got there in the first place, because the help should have been there, but it's not. I think that is really sad.
It's not. I was let down by the mental health teams. You know, I was let down by the councils. I was let down by the professionals.
Yeah.
So many people that go through that. However, I will say it is getting better. There are people like us that are standing there and fighting. There are a few people on this feed that I know, like Willie Anderson, who are out there doing things like this, helping people to speak about their lives and their problems. The Wave Trust, Jay Haston, Angela Haston, all these people, Aidan Martin, all these people that are now at the forefront of the sort of social media campaigns to get people talking about their mental health. And it's what we need, you know.
And that's it. And I think if people don't open up and talk, for it to be seen as a much bigger thing than it is, then people aren't going to get the help. Places aren't going to be opened up for people to go to. Yes, like you say, it is slowly getting better, but it shouldn't be slowly. There should be places out there for people to reach out to. I don't know, for argument's sake, like community hubs where people can go in, talk about mental health, just talk about their day, just talk about anything. That might then help that person to say, actually, now I spoke to this person about the littlest thing that's happened, I can go and get some help and my life will be a lot better. But again, it comes down to funding, space, councils, because you put stuff to your council, oh no, we can't do that, we haven't got the funding for that. Well, fight for the funding then. You know, it's so bad. But like you say, it is getting there slowly, but it shouldn't be slowly.
No. No, this is where I believe churches should be stepping in. and cutting up the slack, cutting the slack between it, you know. I'm very thankful for having a really great church that are really sort of emotionally intelligent, and they you know, I mean, I was on the prayer team on Sunday, and we had people, not even Christians, come into the meeting and come in for prayer because they're struggling, because our church is known as it's called the Hub for a reason. And it's a place where people can come and they can talk about things that they're going through, but they can also get, we've got a community food store. They can talk to people within the church that can help.
I just wonder if churches should be called something like, have the name church, but under it. So like you say, come to the community hub, come to this place, and actually more people might start going and reach out to yourselves and other people that are there that are going down the same path. Because if you say, oh, go to this church, they're really good people. Church? God? No, thanks, he's going to judge me. And I'm going straight to hell. Well, that's not the place. That is not how it is. Church is not there for you and God to judge you. God does not judge. I've reached out to church a couple of times. And I think it would be good if people could go to church or a hub and try and reach out. But I think because it's the name church, like you say, you've got the hub, so probably more people go to it because they don't see it as a church as such. I think if we could have different names, more people might start going and actually feel connected somehow and get the help.
It is about connection, you know, and mental illness is about disconnection, and the opposite of mental illness and addiction is connection. I agree with that. So many people see church as a gallery for good people, and that's how I used to see church, and that's not how church is.
No.
And that's not how church should be. Church isn't a gallery for good people. It is a hospital for the broken.
Yes.
It's a triage for us to go as broken people and get better. And you know, without church, and without my wife and the community that I'm in, I wouldn't be here now. I know it, you know, but we do need to take up that slack. And the thing is about, you know, I'm always banging on about my church. I know I'm, you know, but I love it because we're known in our community for being not only a generous church, but we're out and we're praying with people on the streets, and we're talking to them. And, you know, we do Operation Santa Claus every year, and we give hampers, and we run it in the school holidays. We run something called Fish, which is fun in the school holidays for low-income families that can go, and they can, you know, one day in the week can take their kids in. We do something fun and we feed them all, and it's great. That's what we need. We've got staff at the church that have had pastoral training, that know how to spot, you know, mental illness markers, and it's about signposting and helping. That's what I do. I signpost. I put people onto the Wave Trust, or to people like Jay Haston, because it's important.
Yeah, like I said, it's church isn't, like you say, it isn't go there to be good. No. God wasn't always good. You know, he done some things. God isn't there to judge you. No one in that church is there to judge you because you are going down this path at the minute. And it's just a shame that there aren't more churches out there like yours that can help people. I think if we could get that a lot more promoted all over the country, people might actually think, oh, okay, it's a church, but actually it's also this sort of place, and I might actually feel safe here where I can talk to someone. And they might go there and say, actually, I've got a connection here. I can now get on the right path. It's just obviously, again, it's getting churches to engage with mental health. Putting the two together down here doesn't always go, but I think it should, because you should be able to reach out and say, actually, I went to this place and I was there, but now I'm here. We haven't got that. We get told there's no funding, which I think is a load of polony at times. I think it's because they want the money for something else. Yeah, there should be more places like yours, and whether you call it a hub or a centre or a community space, whatever you want to call it, it should be there to offer those people that think, I can't do this. But actually come in and try. Just come in and try it. You might feel so much different, but it's not there, because you've got to put the two together, and they don't like combined in the two, which I think is wrong, because everything is out there to help you for a reason.
Right now, churches are built in communities, but there used to be a time when communities were built around churches. And that's what we need. We need to put the church back into the community, at the very centre of the community, but at the very front line, because we need to be out there showing love and showing how Christians should act. Yeah. Not how we see, certain Christians acting and banging on about certain views on certain things. Hate the sin, love the sinner, and go out there and just show love in the community and put back into the community what the community is meant for you. My community is, it's got its affluent parts, and it's got its parts that are going through severe austerity. And I think that, several churches in my town are now see that need for people to be, needing help, and things like food club and cutting the slack in the school holidays. So, there's at least one hot meal, so the parent doesn't have to cook it. Running activities with kids in the community. Working within the schools, going out on the streets and just blessing people.
Yeah.
That's what we need to be doing.
But, I mean, it's a shame now in this time in our lives that you used to be able to have your church open all year round for the homeless to go in, so they've got a shelter. You can't do that now, because things will get nicked unless it's packed away. Why should you have to pack it away?
It's not just that, it's the fact that churches are, because I've looked into this, because people, the thing that I always get, I get the odd troll, and because I talk about church quite a bit, I get the odd troll saying, you've been homeless and churches should be used as homeless shelters. Well, that's not actually possible in the way that churches are structured. The Anglican churches and the Catholic churches, they're listed buildings, so they can't be used as anything apart from a church. And the small churches are run as charities, and their building is leased, and it can only be used as a church, a place of worship. There are things that councils could be doing. There are a lot of shops, big chain stores that are shutting down in the city centres that could be taken on and turned into homeless shelters and food kitchens. We're taking up the slack in our community by building a food store to help those that need it the most. There are other churches that are out blessing people on the streets and helping the homeless. But churches can't be used to house people at night. It's not the way that legally that they're structured. But we do need to be doing something. We need to be working with the broken. We need to be working with addicts, alcoholics, the mentally ill, you know, those that are on the just outside of the periphery of what people normally see. Because if we don't do it, who else is going to do it?
Well, exactly.
You know, the Salvation Army are at the centre of it all. I think we, you know, we could all take note from what the Salvation Army do. And they've been at the centre of it all since the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know, when the soldiers were coming back from Dunkirk, they were there with a blanket, a hot drink and a fag. You know, even they were, you know, at the centre of it. You know, when I was homeless, they run a soup kitchen in Norwich. But it's such a big city that, you know, like Portsmouth and Gosport, you know, Gosport's not a small town, is it?
No.
By far, it's not a small town. And I do know that you've got places like the Cranston Project in Portsmouth and Gosport, and you've got street lights in Fareham, which are great projects, day projects for you to go and you know, to help you get sober. That's, they helped me 20-odd years ago to get into that. But we need to be building community of workers who will stand up and they will push out and they will work to help people like us get back on the feet, because otherwise, if we don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. And it's a sad state of affairs.
And that's it. Like you say, there's all these shops closing down. Why doesn't the council take the opportunity to use that space to open it up, even if it's for a couple of hours a night, so people can go there and get a hot drink, get some soup, get a tiny bit of warmth for that person, and have that person to talk and try and get them out of it. We've got so many shops closing down here, so many empty spaces. That's just going derelict.
But the councils are putting in spikes and they're putting in grills to stop people from sleeping in the doorways.
Yeah.
When I was homeless, I got spat at, pissed on. I had things thrown at me. I've been in tents that have been kicked, you know, and set on fire and stuff like that. Because people really don't, they see it every day and they're desensitized to it. And you just, you know, walk past the person with the big issue and you might have change in your pocket, so you stop it from jingling because you don't want to hear it jingling, because you want to go on with your day and you've got a blinkered vision. And we need to be bringing that back in, because people don't care unless it's for likes on Facebook. You know, you see these people out there with the phones going, you know, here's a coat and here's some money and here's some food, and they're filming it and they're taking pictures with them and they're like, look at me, aren't I good? No, we need the invisible heroes that are going to go out there and they're going to help the people that they need to help and then go about doing what they need to do without sticking it on social media.
And again, I think what it comes down to is, with the empty spaces, it comes down to funding. If you did open it up all night, obviously you would have to have someone to man it. It comes down to funding. It shouldn't come down to funding. In theory, you should say that we're looking for volunteers to, we're looking for volunteers to man this safe space at the minute for people at winter so they can go in. But they don't do that. And I know not everybody wants to volunteer, but the ones that will do it is probably the ones that have been through it themselves and has come out the other side and actually thought, hang on, do you know what? I've been there myself. Now let's try and help someone. But also there's a lot of selfishness in the world and think, yeah, they'll get through it. I had to, so they're going to have to as well because I never had the help. Well, that's not the way you should look at things. Sorry, what was that dog doing? Sorry, he's chewing up the cushions.
It's all right.
So, yeah, again, it shouldn't be like that. Like I say, there should be this volunteer that's, actually, I've been
no,
there.
Stop.
Can I help someone come through it? And if I can, what a big accomplishment that is.
Mm.
But then there's always something in the works. Oh, no, we can't ask volunteers to do it. Well, why not? They've probably been there themselves down whatever route. Take that opportunity. If you don't try it, it won't work.
No.
And again, that's a big... Sorry, he's having a fight with the dog. The dog thinks he's big.
Right.
And again, it's that stigma of, no, no one needs this. Well, actually, they do.
Oh.
Everybody needs something, no matter how big or small. Use these spaces. Don't let them go to waste. Don't let another cafe or another hairdresser's go in there and use it for something positive. I mean, I've lost count of the amount of cafes and hairdressers we've now got down Gospel High Street. The only shops we've got is New Look, Savers, Pound Stretcher, Argus. And Pound Land. That's the only shops we've now got in Gospel. Other than that, it's all cafes or hairdressers.
I remember the days when it used to be all internet cafes.
Mm.
I worked at one point, but I mean, it's always been that way. But we need to be getting back into that.
We need to change it, but
yeah.
I suppose, again, it's how do we go about changing it? Do we put petitions up? Do we, you know, then you've got to get X amount of signatures before you can go to your local MP, before they can then take it to government or council. It's a long process, but is it worth doing? Yeah, I think so, because these people need it. Not everybody is lucky. I didn't have a rich family. We weren't poor, but we got through. If you don't have that, it's like you hear on the telly, oh, I can only feed my child one meal a day. Sorry, that shouldn't be out there. Again, these hubs should be open. These safe spaces should be open so you can come have a bowl of soup, have a chat. At least your child's getting two meals a day rather than just their school lunch, because that's not the way it can be. I can only afford to give my child a Christmas cracker. So that's not Christmas. It shouldn't be like that. And again, yeah, it's Christmas Day, but there should be a place that is open for a couple of cheap presents for that child to have and go and have a Christmas dinner. Again, it comes down to funding.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't.
No, it shouldn't. And we need to implement change by starting up grassroots movements. You guys have got the Gospel anti-bullying campaign going on.
Yeah.
I've got the Council of Survivors Voices, and where people can come and they can find out where they can get the help, and they can come and they can stories. We need to be sort of taking up the slack where we can on social media. I'm very aware that you're over half is fighting with the dog.
Yes, so the dog's chewing a coat hanger and trying to nick Jay's food currently. And Jay's like, go away, just lay down and leave me. He's trying to do it as quiet as he can. But also, the dog is only 11 weeks old.
Yeah.
So he's still learning. Now, come and sit with Mummy and do a podcast. Yeah, come on then. Say hi, everybody out there. I'm Bolt. And I like to use Mummy as my chew toy. Yes. So, yeah, it is a big thing. It is, and it shouldn't be. But it is out there. And like you say, don't chew the wire. We've got to be this voice for people that feel that they can't have a voice at the minute. Yeah. And show them that actually having a voice is okay to have. Mm. You're allowed that voice. Yeah. Say how you have felt. And again, if we can open up these spaces, we might be able to get therapy dogs in there. I think people would open up, but not just therapy dogs. If you could, say if I was a volunteer and I could bring my own dog along, I think people would open up a lot more, because dogs know, dogs have that empathy. Even if they sat there and spoke to the dog and they didn't actually think you were listening, actually you have just listened. And, or even if you sit there and you talk through the dog. So you could say, right, I know you can't talk to me. Could you say to, I don't know, say Bolt, because we're trying to train him as a therapy dog for Jay. Could you talk to Bolt? Mm. Bolt's listening. But I am as well. But if you think Bolt will help, talk to him. Mm. You know, and if I think Bolt's got an answer, he'll answer back for you. Do it. You could, there's so many ways around it you could do. But again, it's funding.
Of course it is.
But yeah, we are training Bolt to be a therapy dog, mainly for James. But also we're hoping that he can go into other places like schools, for children that find it hard to read, hospitals. So he's going to be an open therapy dog, but he will mainly be there for Jay. But he's like, look, Dad's got food.
Come on, boy.
Now he's finished. And do it that way. You know, I just think we need to somehow put it out there for the council to say, actually, yes, let's try this. Don't just knock it back. But it doesn't work like that, unfortunately. But we do need to, like yourself, me, Jay, we just need to put it out there to say.
Nicely.
Can you be quiet, please?
Sorry.
You know, because we've all been down that road in some way. We've all been addicted to something. And it's putting it out there to say to the council, well, or for the council to say, yeah, let's do this. This is a really good idea. Let's try it. You can't knock it until you've tried it. But unfortunately, you propose this to councils. Nah, that's not going to work. We tried that in the past. Yeah, but that was the past. This is now. So let's give it another try with a different direction, a different approach, and see where you can get. Again, it's how you go about it to councils. I don't know. Maybe it's something we could work on, Jack, and see what we can do for people.
Yeah, it's worth exploring. It's worth looking at. You know, it's always worth looking at. I think with that, we'll sort of leave it there. But is there any, you know, before we go, is there anything that you'd like to say to people that might be watching, that might be going through some difficult times at the moment?
All I'd like to say is thank you for listening. If you are going through a difficult time, no matter what it might be, even if you think, oh, this is really stupid what I'm going through, I can't talk about this, message Jack, get through to me, let's see what we can do. I'm there to help. I've been there, I've done it, I've got the medal, I've even got the cell to prove it because I've been locked up in one. Just reach out, please reach out. I know it's a hard thing to do. I won't say it's easy. But if you want to message through Jack to get hold of myself or James,
or a campaign.
Or even the anti-bullying gospel campaign that we are doing, and we will advertise that again. And also, if you can advertise that as well again, Jack, just reach out through whatever means it is. Just message Jack if you need to get hold of me. Please, I'm here to help. Don't think I will judge you, because I won't, because I've been there, and judging people is no good. So, yeah, just please reach out for help if you can. And you can, and you will get through this. It's hard. It's very hard. But there is light at the end of the tunnel for everyone. No matter what you've done in your life, there is light. So let's make this a better world for everybody. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you. I am able to signpost people to things like the Seven Spirits campaign and Wave Trust as well, and put you onto people like, as I said earlier, Jay Haston and Angela Haston, who big faces in the sort of recovery circuit and trying to help people with get sober through stoicism, which is a great way to be. Thank you everybody for tuning in, as always. It's been great to have you. I've noticed that there's quite a few people being in watching live, which is really nice to see, and a few messages of support. So thank you. Hopefully I shall see you in the next week or so with another episode. I'm working on getting a few more people before Christmas, maybe another two, and then we'll be calling it a day until January. But thanks for tuning in, and I shall see you next time, guys. Cheers.